Welcome to the Scuttlebutt Radio Program with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now. A show for veterans by veterans.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, Voice of the Veterans for Veterans, transmitting live on 106.5 FM. Firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. You're on board with Tom Claxton. Co-host Hollywood is out on assignment. Hell, he's just AWOL. He won't admit it. We're both veterans of the United States Marine Corps, and we're glad that you have joined us to discuss the issues facing our veterans today. And we're proud to be broadcasting live from the battleship USS Alabama on beautiful Mobile Bay. We've got a great show coming up for you, but first we want to thank some of our sponsors that make this show possible, and that is one of our first sponsors, the battleship USS Alabama Memorial Park, the Charlie Wilson Agency, the law firm of Garberg and Kimberly, the New Edge Seafood Shed at the top of the hill at Spanish Fort, and the Medicare lady, Miss Keisha Chambers, and Serenity Funeral Home and Gardens. And without all of our great sponsors and you great listeners, we certainly could not do this without your support. So please let them know that you heard it on the Scuttlebutt. SBN is all about giving our veterans a voice on the issues that are important to them. So join us, discuss it on Facebook or follow Cal on Twitter. And later we'll be getting an update from the front lines of the battle for Goat Hill and the latest development on Meemaw's power grab over our veterans. And, of course, my tirade on putting the band back together. You won't want to miss it. But first, it's always great to be joined on SBN by our new executive director of the battleship, retired Navy Commander Mark Fields. And, Commander, thank you for having us here, and thank you for your service, brother.
Thank you so much. It is so great to have you here. Love the opening that you provided there. I do believe that what a great way for veterans to take care of other veterans this medium.
Sir, well, you know, I'm sure you found it in your time since you've been out of active duty that it seems that if we want anything done for a veteran, it takes a veteran to do it.
Absolutely.
And we are certainly displeased with the way that things have occurred with us by removing our veterans from our state when we've got 400,000 veterans in the state of Alabama, and you consider it's like 1.6, 1.7 person attached to each one of those veterans. We're talking about over a million veteran-related people in the state of Alabama. So it's extremely pleasing, though, to see that you guys here at the battleship USS Alabama do such a great job and recognize all of our veterans, and you continue to promote them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 364 days a year. The only one day you're closed, Christmas Day, I
Christmas
guess.
Day.
Right. Well, what have you got going on here, little lady?
All right.
Miss Hannah?
Hi.
Hannah Bodana, that's what it is.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me. Well, this weekend, of course, we have our Living History Crew Drills. It's our first one of 2025.
Oh, they are so awesome.
They are. We were talking on the other radio show. It's just it's a live reenactment, but it's also just so immersive. I mean, it's just a great thing for all ages.
It doesn't matter
your age range, but it's a great day for the family too. We highly recommend, you know, you get here around 11 so you can get comfortable, see some things, and then the call to battle stations at 1. Ooh. So you get to see the planes fly over. There's no plans for them not to. You can check our social media at USS Alabama Battleship Memorial Park on any updates on that. But as of right now, they're flying, so that'll be really cool. And yeah, we just highly recommend that. And then also, it's snowbird season.
Yes.
And so we have our snowbird guided tours, which are every other week. So this week's kind of our off week, but next week it'll be Tuesday and Thursday. And you can check that on our website and our events page to sign up. And then we have our wonderful volunteer, Rob Dumont. He's giving excellent tours. Everybody seems to love them. So don't miss on that. It's included in admission prices. And then also we have snowbird lectures. We have one tomorrow, actually, in the wardroom. And you just come in, pay admission, and it's included in admission, and it's 11 a.m. in the wardroom. And you can
it's awesome. It is really awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, all of the events that you have here on a daily basis, weekly basis, and then you have these monthly events on the reenactments. Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking, I was talking a while ago about we just lost one of my Marines, and we were talking about his funeral and all, and I was talking with my good brother there, Brian Battaglio, which will be on here with us a little bit, about firing our rifles. You know, we have, mm-hmm. and what I was relating this to is that when we would fire those rifles for a funeral like that with blanks, it's kind of a blood-curdling deal that it really gets to you. It hits us, especially us Marines and people that haven't been around it at all. You see a lot of tears. And that's what's occurring for you guys in the presentation that you're making aboard the battleship. Mm-hmm. And when we all do those reenactments, and they've actually been able to figure out a way to make those weapons fire and yet still be safe. And, I mean, it gives you cold chills when that occurs and all, because so many of our people don't realize, and we don't teach this in our schools anymore, what the battleship is all about, mm-hmm. what all of these planes and the submarine and all the special tanks and everything that y'all have on display here, mm-hmm. and what it was all about. How were they used? And what an education.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
what an education for a family to come through and bring their children through here.
It's a walking classroom. I mean,
it is.
It's
literally.
It's perfect. And it's like you said, I mean, even they don't teach about it enough in schools at all, but you could read about something all day long, but actually experiencing it, like you're saying, the firing of the guns and planes.
When you reach over and touch that plane.
It's different.
You reach over and touch that vehicle, or you know, in some of the uniforms that y'all have on mm-hmm. display, it's blood curdling. And, I mean, it hits home. And we need that. Mm-hmm. Our young people and our children need to know where we come from, why we are here, why we had to do what we did, you know? And it's like this great gentleman that y'all have now aboard as your new director. You know, he was an officer in the Navy, a commander, and somebody had to, and we were talking about it before we went on air, somebody back there in the 1800s and 1900s, had to lay that groundwork
exactly
and protect his country so we'd even have a country mm-hmm. that he would have, but he would be able to go and fight for. So, you know, we can't overlook that, and we appreciate what y'all do. Commander, what a blessing to have you on board. We're extremely pleased. You're going to be one hell of a director. I see that.
Well, I guess the best way to describe how I'm feeling is that it's just an awesome honor to be here.
It is.
I am following a couple of legends.
Yes.
When you look at Major General Cobb and now Commissioner Bill Tunnell.
Boy, Bill Tunnell, what an awesome gentleman.
Legendary.
Yes.
So I'm not even naive enough to think I will ever fill their shoes. But I'm blessed to be able to have them as mentors
And you got a great group of people working here. They have been well trained. They do a good job. So it's not lucky you come on board a sinking ship. Maybe this was dry docked, you know.
As Hannah will tell you, in my first few days on board, I had a chance to meet with each and every team member, whether it be a full-time team member, a volunteer, a part-timer, and every single one of them clearly understands why they're here. Our core mission, honoring our veterans of all services.
Well,
they understand it clearly.
I feel extremely blessed, and I know that the rest of the South Alabama area will, in your capability and the way, I'm 86 years old, and I've seen a lot of people, and I've interviewed people for over 40 years, And you get where you can read people, and you know whether they are what they present themselves to be. I got a good reading on you, sir. God bless you. We're proud to have you.
I'm so thankful to be here. As I mentioned to you earlier, my connection to this battleship goes back a number of years when I was stationed in Tuscaloosa.
Oh, yes.
And had a chance to meet with a then battleship commissioner. And after I retired, I came back, and I'm just so honored to be here.
Well, thank you so much for letting us be here today. And enjoyed the interview, enjoyed the meeting you, sir. And Hannah Bodana, she does an awesome job here for you.
She is awesome.
But we'll be back here, you know, next month for another remote. And Sean is be with us, and he does such an outstanding job for our veterans as well. He might as well be one. But and we've come back. We'll have Sergeant Major Brian Pataglio, our Patriot of the Year, on board with us. And I told him, he's got an opinion. Don't hold back. I want to hear it all.
Thank you for having us.
We fight our country's battles in the air, on land and sea. First to fight for right and freedom, and to keep our honor free.
This is my rifle. There are many like it, but this one is mine. My rifle is my best friend. It is my life.
I must master it as I must master my life. Without me, my rifle is useless. Without my rifle, I am useless.
It's Scuttlebutt Radio with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now.
Welcome back to the show. It's a pleasure to be back here with you on this phase of the Scuttlebutt Network Radio Show. And what an extreme pleasure it is for me to have this gentleman on board with us here today. I have a couple of heroes in my life, and this happens to be one of them. I highly respect this gentleman for what he's been, where he's been, what he's done, and what he's still doing for our veterans. And God bless you, brother, and thank you. It's not a command sergeant, Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps, Brian Pataglio, our Patriot of the Year. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, thank you for your service. I was talking a little bit while ago about what MEMO is trying to do to us with our veterans up there and all. And I know that you had the pleasure of being on this board that they're now talking about getting rid of, and you actually served on it for 2 years. And I guess you represented the Marine Corps League.
Correct.
And that was an awesome venue. It's a pleasure to have you on board. What are we seeing? What's happening to us in Montgomery, sir?
Well, I guess I could start part of this conversation out with military guys and gals grow up in serving in uniform, not having to worry about being involved in politics.
Amen.
That's one of the beauties of service.
Right.
And so I think that is one of the reasons why our veteran community, and probably in other states too, is having such a hard time digesting, much less accepting, what's happening here to the veterans via the power push that our governor is throwing down upon us. I served on that board for 4 years, actually, And there's a misnomer I'd like to clear on the air about the board members. So the board in totality is 17 members. The first or the 17th member is the governor by kind of de facto, is always the chairman of the board. The other 16 are brought on through a vetting process through the VSOs.
Right.
The Veteran Service Organizations. This is for the listeners. I know you know
this right.
Already.
That's right. Yeah, I'm aware. That's all right.
And so the only reason that I see, logical reason that I see of why the VSOs are involved in this process is that they're an established organization with a charter. And they're a vetting mechanism as well. So when an appointment comes time for a board member by the governor, that name, like Brian Battaglia, was fairly thoroughly vetted by the VSO before it went to the governor's office to save everyone from some embarrassment.
Right. What you're saying, though, in regards to this, you weren't appointed to that board because you were friends with the mayor, or excuse me, the governor or the lieutenant governor. And it wasn't because you made a big donation to somebody's campaign.
No. As a matter of fact, if those were the eligibility criteria, I wouldn't even have made
the shortlist. You wouldn't have been on the board. Right.
That's correct. And so, again, that's one of the beauties. It's bipartisan. It's non-political. And it's a system that worked. Now, while the Marine Corps League may have been the VSO that submitted my name, when I sat on the board and voted, and I believe I speak on behalf of all the board members, when I sat on that board and voted on issues that affected every branch of the service in our veteranship, it was taking the best interest of all veterans, not just Marine Corps League members. And that's one of the misnomers right now, is that, well, because the Marine Corps League got you placed on that board, you're only going to represent Marines who belong to the League. Couldn't be any further from the truth, Tom. And
oh, totally.
That word, really needs to be educate our public with regard to that. It's almost in your ethical DNA that, as a matter of fact, I served as a committee chairman to National Guard and Reserve equality, meaning that we wanted to find ways to bring some leverage and more equality to the benefits a National Guardsman and reservists get compared to an active duty member, because they're slightly different.
Right, they are.
We wanted to bring and level the playing field as much as we could, and we did. That's me in a guardsman and reservist capacity, serving as a almost 37-year active duty guy.
Right.
So that misnomer of we only representing the VSO that were there is...
That's not true.
It's no. total BS, yeah.
All right.
Yes, so how this has played out thus far really has me agitated, and agitated is probably an understatement.
Oh, that's an easy word. I mean, I know your feelings, and I...
It's insulting.
It is.
And I can physically stand in front of you in my hand of God attest that, I know much more than what some people who come on the show or write an article or saying,
because
I sat at the board.
You were there. And you was one, as the boy, country boy said.
That's right. I'm seeing it live and in color.
Right.
I know what Admiral Davis did. Because I voted on it, we approved it, seen it live and in color. And this guy has taken us through obstacles and milestones to where the ADVA, used to be. So it's very disheartening to see a kick in the stomach by a leader of our state to an organization that was making miles of progress.
Right.
It really is.
And has for over 80 years. Now let me interject this. When this board was formed in like the 40s, right after World War II,
right,
the veterans had a reason for forming the board and getting it in legislation as they did, so that it would be controlled by the veterans, not by some appointed political yahoo.
Correct.
Because they had seen this already happen after World War I. And they saw what happened to those people and how the veterans were treated after that event. So they made it a God-fearing point that they were not going to let that happen again. So they developed it to the point where the governor and the other politicians didn't control what happened to our veterans as much as they could control in the state of Alabama. Now, all that's going to hell in a handbasket. We kicked under the curb with that.
Governor Ivey obviously has her own style of leadership. It's not a style that I approve of. I think it's rather toxic. It's very
You're being nice.
Dictator-like. I'm trying to be as diplomatic as I can right now, Tom.
Don't worry about it. Lay it out.
I'm actually looking at my watch, holding my wrist to check my pulse.
I noticed.
I don't get too fired up. But toxicity in a command structure is going to bring turbulence. And I know where this all originates back to and how Governor Ivey has come back, not just at Admiral Davis, but the board itself and then the veteranship writ large with this retaliation going back to that ethics complaint that, by the way, he had to file by law. And so the guy is being punished for doing what he's supposed to do.
Doing what he's supposed to.
I don't get it.
What we had him there for.
It makes no sense at all.
Yes.
It makes as much sense as me stopping at a makeup artist to get powder put on my face before I came in here to do an interview with you.
You're on the radio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's about as much sense, right. And so she's continued on. She's not let up. Why in the world would this woman want to leave a legacy like that?
Yes.
I don't know.
And destroy everything that she's supposedly built in the past over all of these years.
Yeah. What turned her will be interesting to find out. Maybe we never do. Maybe it goes into the JFK files, you know, in that secret classified level. But I would hope that she can live with herself with these decisions that she's made that's really negatively impacted the veteran community.
But it's just unbelievable that this is happening. And it appears that it's kind of like you catch me with my hand in the till. So then when you catch me, I'm going to belittle you and destroy you because you did something to me, because you caught me doing something illegal. And to me, that's exactly what's happening to our country at this time. Was everybody wanted everything to be done that the president's doing. And then once he started doing it and they had got caught with their hand in the till, this is stupid. We can't do that. He's doing wrong. Well, it makes me think Meemaw got caught with her hand in the till. But we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back here in just a few minutes.
Sounds good.
With our good brother here and Patriot of the Year, Sergeant Major Brian Battaglia.
Sergeant Hartman, your senior drill instructor. From now on, you will speak only when spoken to. And the first and last words out of your filthy sewers will be, sir. Do you maggots understand that?
Sir, yes, sir.
Can't hear you. Sound off like you got a pair.
Sir, yes, sir.
It's Scuttlebutt Radio with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now.
And welcome back. Thank you for joining us today on the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, a voice of the veterans, for veterans, transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing shots heard around the world on scuttlebuttnetwork.com. And we certainly want to thank all the fine folks that continue to help make this show possible. The battleship USS Alabama Memorial Park, RC lawyers Colin Kimberly, and all the fine folks at the law firm of Gardberg and Kimberly, Miss Keisha Chambers, the Medicare lady, Ed's Seafood Shed on top of the hill in Spanish Fort, the Charlie Wilson Agency, and Serenity Funeral Home and Gardens. And again, it's a pleasure to have the Sergeant Major on board here with us today. But we've also pulled Brother Sean in here with us. He's got an opinion on this stuff, and he's been fighting this over the months and all that we've been fighting. So I know that, that Brian had something he wanted to bring up, but Sean, I know you've been monitoring the text board.
Mm-hmm.
What did we find?
Yeah, I'll throw this to you two veterans here. So Michael says, if this ADVA thing goes through, then the veterans groups need to stop being apolitical. I know traditionally they've been apolitical, but that will have to change. Y'all's thoughts?
Hmm.
Wow.
Where are you at, Brian? What you think?
I mean, that's pretty powerful. It's an eye-opener to me that we would ever bring up a suggestion like that to find ourselves that a condition has been set where someone would have to say that.
Right.
And I hope it never comes true and that veterans groups can remain apolitical, non-political. There may be some inner sprinklings of it already. Of course, we're all American voters, so we have, you know, a Republican or a Democrat or independent, but there are also many voters who are going to vote on, you know, kind of a merit-based performance.
Right.
That they may be a Republican, but if a Democrat really shows the business.
Yes, they step up.
That's right.
Right.
Well, I mean, we just talked about that off there, right? That, you know, yesterday, and I was mentioned this earlier, that two of the no votes, you know, it was 21-9 this goes through in the Senate, but two of the no votes were from senators in our area. Senator Figures and Senator Elliott. Senator Figures is a Democrat. Senator Elliott's a Republican.
Right.
But they both had the vote for the vets.
Yeah, well,
so,
well,
I mean, so the apolitical thing is, I mean, I think it's been a strong thing that the military, like y'all said at the beginning, that you don't have to be political
right.
when you're serving. You don't have to do that. It's taken out of it. Maybe there's a chance with this that we have people that just see the merit in it. It doesn't matter what letters behind their name. But, you know, it's one that you got to, I mean, you got to lobby. It's a shame to say, but I've said this to y'all before as a civilian here in this mix. Y'all got to lobby as hard as whatever other interests. I mean, you think you shouldn't have to. You're veterans, but y'all going to have to lobby people too.
Right. Yeah, it gets that way. But where we didn't really want to have to do that. But, you know, like I was talking about with the commander a while ago, there's over 400,000 veterans in the state of Alabama. That's a big voting streak there.
Well, and add to that, like Sergeant Major and I talked about last time he was on my show, let's take, and I was a communications major, so excuse me for my math, but let's say it's 400,000 veterans. Just go low, two family members for each veteran.
Right. We're
now, what's the multiple we're looking at?
We're
looking at
$1.4 million. $1.2 million, $1.4 million.
And if you start adding in not just dependent family members, but parents.
Right.
And that. Now, what kind of exponential are we looking at? How many Alabamians are affected by this? It's not de minimis. It's not insignificant.
Right.
Insignificant. It's major.
Sure.
Well, one of the things that I thought was kind of weird is that the lieutenant governor came out and he wasn't for this bill either, and he was on the veteran side. Where was his vote at?
We were pretty elated to see that. You know, to go against Meemaw in opposition.
Right.
And, I mean, perhaps, and this is only an assumption, he wasn't doing that just as the lieutenant governor, but
as an
perhaps
individual.
Making a stance of
right.
the next governor.
Oh, yes, the next governor.
You know, but you'd like to think his heart is in the right place.
We think,
and he's
we
doing
would
it
hope.
For the best interest of you know, it's military. And
right.
It didn't have any political underwritings like, well, it'll help get Space Command here or, you know, anything
no.
like that.
Right.
It's just this is the right thing to do. And there have been enough veterans that have come to him to say it is the right thing to do. And so his letter obviously was pretty strong when it said, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Right. Amen.
I mean, it was pretty pretty simple.
Where the hell was he when we needed to vote?
Yeah, well,
Where was he at to push the vote?
He didn't show up at the meeting yesterday. And I think the rule states that he doesn't vote unless it's a tie.
Right.
Right.
But his presence
his
there
presence
alone.
His presence would have helped with his opinion.
But his absence
voiced.
Also made
right.
a statement, you know, to us.
It, to us it did, yes.
Yeah, and I do wonder about that as there is a, you know, we have a strong executive branch in the state. Not all states are the same, but the executive branch is fairly strong versus the
yes.
legislative in Alabama. There's fear, we've seen in bills before that aren't even veterans bills, where the power of the governor's mansion is reflected in what happens in the legislature. So people need cover sometimes to disagree, even with the the executive of their own party.
Sure.
Lieutenant Governor could step in there and have given, I think, cover to some of those that said, hey, I know it's the right vote, but gosh, I've got to pass a bill about whatever for my local area or something
right.
You know, I've got this whole bag full of bills that I'm working on, you know, that I thought that could have helped maybe change it. But, I mean, I was in shock yesterday, 21-9, one abstention.
That, that's unbelievable. It's really unbelievable. And to see and knowing that we've broadcast the fact that, and we understand that the bill that they operate under was written the way that it is to stop the same identical crap that's going on now, so that we wouldn't have this, you know, that we would have, we would be able to have a say-so in our director for the state, and we would help be able to pick out somebody that would treat us right, treat the veterans right. And Lord knows, the admiral has certainly done that. How many of the people on the governor's, meemaw's cabinet has even been to the damn cemeteries that we have in the state? How many of them have been to the old folks' homes that we have for our veterans in the states? You know, how many of them have visited the 60-something counties that we have that have veterans' offices here representing our veterans, trying to help take care of these guys that's struggling to live? Hell.
How many were at the Veterans Day parade this year?
Well, amen. Right. Yeah.
You
nobody.
Know, there,
nobody was there.
May have been a staff member, nameless or faceless, that
But it wasn't recognized faces, O'Brien.
But I could tell you somebody who wasn't there and who hadn't been there was Governor Ivey.
Amen.
Not to one state veteran home, or five of them, not to the grand opening of the fifth one, not to any of the veteran service offices. She showed up for one meeting in my 4 years, and that was to give a political statement of how she loves veterans, take a picture, and then she bailed.
A picture of it, yeah.
I mean, she got out of there almost as quick as this bill has been vetted.
Well, you know, that says a lot, Brian. It says a lot, sir.
You know, and get y'all's reaction to this. I've kept harping on it since the State of the State address. And I'm paraphrasing, but I think I'm fairly close. When Governor Ivey said, I need a head of the ADVA that is a team player with the executive branch. So, in other words, I need somebody who does what the executive branch does. I think she said the quiet part out loud. You want somebody who does what you do. I would say the point of having the Alabama Department of Veterans Affairs is to do, I don't know, what the veterans need and want. Not what the executive branch does.
Come on.
I mean, because that, and also, even if she thought she was pure of heart on this, who's the next executive? Who's the next governor? Who's the next governor? I want veterans helping veterans and not beholden to changes in Montgomery every time there's a new governor.
Totally.
Absolutely. Totally. And that's not to say that with the day-to-day operations of the ADVA, there are non-veterans who can be assigned to that organization who can play a part.
But they're few and far between, Brian.
That's true.
They're few and far between.
There are non-veterans who are assigned to the ADV, to the staff, and they do a wonderful job.
Right.
But they're all...
They're not making the decisions, though, in the direction for veterans in the state.
They're not. And if we allow that to happen, it's a great injustice.
It is. Yeah, you know, it's just they are kicking us to the curb, taking us down a primrose path. But we will. I'm going to hear my tirade here in just a second, and when we get back from that, we'll close out with a few things that I know these gentlemen would like to bring up. And for more information, you can always check out scuttlebuttnetwork.com. And on the other side of the break, my tirade, putting the band back together.
Some in the conservative media and others in the political pundit class have followed our lead here at SBN and have begun referring to the current regime as the weekend at Biden's administration in recognition of the similarities between Life Support Joe, propped up by Kamala Harris and Susan, let's go to the videotape, Rice, and the movie weekend at Bernie's. where two friends have to quite literally prop up their dead boss over the course of a weekend of beachfront partying in order to convince everyone that he is still in charge. One particular political cartoon actually went so far as to portray Biden behind the desk of the Oval Office, with Obama propping up his head while an all-too-anxious Kamala Harris holds the hand that launched 1,000 executive orders. All humor aside, the opening salvos of the Biden regime, coupled with the dizzying pace at which they have been dropped on the heads of the American people, have caused me to reconsider my classification of the political landscape. Instead of weekend at Biden's, a more appropriate comparison might be back to the future of the Wizard of Oz, with Obama as the man behind the curtain. In just a short 4 weeks, the American public has been treated to the implementation of anti-American policies by executive fiat unlike any other time in our history. Biden's orders have stopped construction of the wall along the U.S.-Mexico border, inviting caravans of illegal aliens into our country with a no check on COVID. He reversed the ban on transgender individuals serving in the U.S. military, costing the taxpayers money for elective surgeries and reducing our force readiness. But he reversed Trump's travel ban on mostly Muslim countries, allowing terrorists unfettered access to our nation. He rejoined the World Health Organization, effectively putting China back in control of the global health network. He rejoined the Paris Climate Agreement and rolled back Trump energy policies, such as the contract for the Keystone XL pipeline, costing tens of thousands of high-paying skilled union jobs, as well as driving up the price of gas by nearly 50 cents, while decimating domestic energy production and making us beholden, once again, to Vladimir Putin and the oil sheiks from OPEC, while making socialist sh-holes like Venezuela rich. Oh, and he wants to get cozy with the mullahs in Iran once again, the same mullahs responsible for killing and maiming our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. I guess after doing nothing for 47 years as a politician, he was well-rested and raring to go. The damage that will come from his orders will be far-reaching, both in its immediate scope as well as its long-term effects. For most Americans, this must feel like a slap in the face, almost as if Biden is the withered hand of vengeance for the communist progressive whose policies were repudiated by the American people under President Trump, and who now feel emboldened to come in from the cold and run roughshod over the great nation and its patriots. Nowhere is it safe to believe in the Constitution, lest you be placed on a blacklist or scheduled for deprogramming and re-education. The halls of Congress are no safe haven, with vicious attacks from communists such as AOC on originalists such as Ted Cruz coming on an almost daily basis with no limits to her vitriolic, hateful remarks. Neither is the military, which was ordered into a stand down to drive out freedom-loving patriots to the Constitution under the guise of the phantom menace of white supremacy. Of course, along with the reimposition of the draconian dictates from the Obama regime, came the resurrection of so many familiar faces from the halcyon days of the progressive push, such as the spokesbabe for Biden, Jen P. Psaki, who served in Obama's communications department and has circled back to her old digs. The aforementioned liar of Benghazi, Susan Rice, now pulling the strings on the equality front. John Curry, who served in Vietnam and who is currently using his self-appointed superhero status to single-handedly fight climate change by using his invisible private jet almost exclusively to save the world. And Dennis McDonough, the bureaucrat apologist for the VA waitlist scandal, who now runs the whole show.
We're putting the band back together.
Of course, along with the familiar faces running cover for Dead Fish Joe, a number of other rock stars from the Obama regime are putting their best foot forward, including one of the great traitors made famous by OB, Bo Bergdahl. You may remember that Bergdahl pleaded guilty in 2017 to desertion and misbehavior before the enemy after leaving his post in Afghanistan in June 2009 and setting off a massive search and rescue operation that involved thousands of U.S. troops. Six soldiers were killed while searching for Bergdahl. Yet the Communist-in-Chief, Barack Hussein Obama, proudly appeared outside the White House in 2014 with the traitor's parents to announce his freedom after OB handed over the Taliban 5 from Gitmo. Don't forget, it was Obama's National Security Advisor, Susan Rice, who said that Bergdahl, quote, served the United States with honor and distinction while consorting with the enemy. The same piece of feces, traitor has now filed a petition in federal court seeking to have his military conviction and sentence expunged based on arguments of unlawful command influenced by former President Donald Trump and new information from the judge who presided over his court-martial. These same arguments were brought up during the trial and were dismissed as recently as last August by the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces, which upheld his conviction, saying the comments did not invalidate his prosecution, adding that Bergdahl's decision to plead guilty played heavily in the case. Actually, his plea was a coward's way out of standing before a firing squad. So why wait until now to file such a specious argument? One only has to look as far as who now sits in the Oval Office and where his communist handler sympathies lie. These are the same comrades who decided it was appropriate to commute the 35-year sentence of Bradley Manning, convicted of violating the Espionage Act for releasing over 200,000 United States diplomatic cables and over 400,000 classified Army reports, and was set free by Comrade Obama to appease the transgender community. The same comrades who thought it was fitting to prosecute and jail American heroes who did nothing more than act upon the training to save the lives of their fellow soldiers in combat. The same bastards who left our ambassador and brave soldiers in Benghazi to die at the hands of a terrorist mob. And the same sons of bitches who are now on a witch hunt to purge the military of every red-blooded patriot in the ranks. The fact that this piece of flotsam still breathes is a testimony to the forgiveness that exists within the American people. But for him to have the gall to ask that his very lenient sentence be overturned is just another slap in the face of those who have served honorably and the families of those who never came back looking for his sorry traitor's ass. We may forgive, but we certainly don't forget. Bergdahl should endure the shame of a dishonorable discharge for the rest of his miserable existence and be thankful that we didn't follow the suggestions of President Trump that Bergdahl be sent back over to serve the Taliban as the little traitorous bitch that he is. For the Scuttlebutt Network, this is Tom Claxton. Are you pissed off yet?
Where's your drill sergeant, men?
Hold up, sir!
Hold up, sir! So am I to understand that you men completed your training on your own?
That's the fact, Jack!
These are exactly the kind of men I want working on the Scuttlebutt Network.
Welcome back to the Scuttlebutt Radio Program, the voice of the veterans for the veterans on 106.5, streaming live on Scuttlebutt. And it's a pleasure to have the Sergeant Major back here with us, Brian. We've got some rally. We've got a rally going on. We need to be there for the vote. How's that working? What do we need to do?
Well, that's going next week, Tom. Okay. So it's fairly short order. We have been advertising it for about a week now. It is on the 25th, which is next week. We're going to do this in Montgomery at the State House. It's being advertised on public social media, South Alabama Veterans Council page, and others. And that starts at 11:30.
Okay.
And, you know, we chose around the lunchtime hour. We don't know if there'll be the House or the Senate that's in session or not. We, you know, that wasn't our purpose. This is not a protest. It certainly isn't any sort of gathering insurrection.
It's just a
veteran rally.
Right.
And we are going to, you know, have a formation on the grounds nearby the State House to show our presence and allow those to hear our voice.
Okay.
This is open to not just veterans, not just military, but family members.
Right, yeah.
Good heart.
Any veteran support group.
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah, any Alabama citizen who believes in their military.
Sure.
Any branch of the service, including the National Guard. And so we want to converge on the State House grounds, 11:30 next on the 25th.
All right, I think that's next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday.
Right, okay. All right, now there's some media out about that, that there actually may be a bus ride available if enough people will get on the internet and let it be known.
Yeah, there is. You can go again to the South Alabama Veterans Council Facebook page. And or you, if you happen to be on a mailing list, there is a chartered bus. If enough people show up, that's going to be leaving from Mobile and Baldwin County, only to go north.
Right.
Others would have to, but you can also make your way up there by yourself.
Sure. You can take your own vehicle.
Absolutely. We just want to see you there. It lasts about an hour and a half. It's a day trip, and pretty simple, but will make a large statement.
Right. And you don't wear your uniforms, guys. And gals, but do, you know, fly your colors and, you know, show your branch of service that you were in and are in. And, but we really don't need to have any actual uniforms available.
Our message, Tom, remains the same. This is a kill the bill.
Kill the bill.
Message.
Right.
It's not, we like the amendments because we think that's just lipstick on a pig. It's kill the bill. And so if attendees wish to make a sign, that's what we'd like to say.
Kill the bill,
along
right.
Those lines of kill the bill. Because the bill, Tom, the bill offers primarily two things that politicizes this organization, which has traditionally, since 1945, been non-political.
Right.
One is that it's going to politicize the commissioner by working at the mercy and pleasure of the governor. The governor happens to be Republican. Probably the commissioner is going to have to sing and drink that Kool-Aid.
Right. He's going to have that Kool-Aid.
And if the commissioner doesn't, you know, abide by it because he or she's trying to remain in a non-political posture, then the governor just finds another one.
See, you're no longer the commissioner.
Regardless of whether it's in the best interest of the veterans or not. So it's just like big federal VA.
Well, that's what we've been trying to stop, to keep from having an organization like that.
Yeah, we really need to stop it. And then the other thing of why we're opposing the bill is what the governor and Ed Oliver, the sponsor of this bill, is trying to do to the standing State Board of Veterans Affairs. There's nothing wrong with the way it operates right now.
Right.
We hope it stays as such.
It's not broke,
don't fix it.
Don't fix it. Amen. That's an extreme pleasure of having you on, and I'm looking forward to hearing you be on with Sean this next week. God bless you, brother.
And hope you have me back, too.
I will. I will, and we appreciate your service.
Semper Fi.
And remember, hero is not a four-letter word. Oh, God.